Radio FUBAR. Radio. Fucked up beyond all recognition.
Yeah.
Wheelbarrow full of dicks, where the conversation will make your mother sick. One couch and alcohol, with three fat guys. We say mean and crazy things, and one of us is high. Wheelbarrow full of dicks. Wheelbarrow full of dicks, where the penis jokes come fast and thick. We've been getting away with this for far too long. Join us Monday nights on RadioFubar.com.
Well, maybe dinosaurs have more in common with present-day birds than they do with reptiles.
Look at the pubic bone, turned backward, just like a bird. Look at the vertebrae, full of air sacs and hollows, just like a bird.
And even the word raptor means bird of prey.
That doesn't look very scary. More like a six-foot turkey.
Turkey, huh?
No.
Hello and welcome to the Wheelbarrow Full of Dicks internet radio program. I am Mike. I am joined by my co-hosts, Napier, and via Skype, Mr. Travis Hulls.
Hold on.
How is everyone?
Napier?
I'm awesome.
Are you awesome?
Yeah.
You look it. Boy, oh boy. Do we have a big show planned for tonight?
Big Yay. Show!
Well, actually, the big show tonight... Oh, it is our 150th episode, so yeah, congratulations to us. But beyond that, what I'm going to do on this show is I'm going to tell you about the awesome shit we're going to do on the next show.
That seems a little weird.
You don't know anything about this yet, do you?
No.
Do you want to know why you don't know anything about it?
Probably because I don't make any input into the show.
You have no way of contacting you. You have a phone screener, Napier.
Yeah?
You have a phone screener. I have to text message your girlfriend to contact you to answer my question, and then she contacts me back to get the answer. You have a phone screener. You're that big of a deal.
I know. I mean, it's awesome. I have a gatekeeper for all of my information.
We need to have a bachelor party or something for you, don't we? Some kind of like man get together thing, don't we? You're getting married soon. This is a big deal.
Yeah.
You don't seem very excited.
Well, I don't really hang out with people.
I know, but I mean, it's a special occasion. Do you have an aquarium?
Technically.
Like one that we can use?
Yeah, I got one.
Let me tell you my idea. Next week on the show, we're going to play Rat Shit Bingo. Travis was kind of pushing for Rat Scat Bingo.
I'm a champion of the Rat Scat.
Rat Scat Bingo, because Travis loves rhymes.
Mouse tracks?
That, and it doesn't have curse language in it, so that it'll be easier to sell to all of the, you know, kids.
To the squares. It's easier to sell to the squares and more marketable.
So I saw a thing with the country folks. They do like chicken shit bingo, where they put a big bingo board out in like a chicken coop, and then everybody bets on which bingo number the chicken shits on. So I thought we'd play rat shit bingo, and we have big prizes. People can pick their number that they think the rat will shit on, and then we'll just have it going throughout the show. The rat will just run around in this little aquarium, and then if it shits, then we get all excited and see what it shits on. That's fun, right?
That sounds kind of like rat shit roulette.
Rat shit roulette?
Yeah.
But no, it'll be a bingo card, so it's bingo.
Yeah, but, I mean, does he shit on multiple numbers or just one?
Well, that's a good point. What if he shits on a whole bunch of numbers? See, we have to work this stuff out. Like, what are the prizes? What happens if he shits on... What happens if he just goes on, like, a shit storm and shits on everything? Does everybody win? Maybe there just won't be one clear-cut winner. Maybe there will be multiple winners. Like, if he shits on one and keeps going, then, I mean, everyone could be technically a winner, right?
Well, who's bringing the rat to this fuck party?
I mean, you could get a rat, right?
Yeah, but what are we going to do with it, like, after we're done, like,
release
making shit?
Release it to the wild, freedom.
I'm pretty sure that's how rats die. Or that's how the plague starts.
If you go get a rat at a pet store, chances are you're getting them so that, like, a snake can eat them, right?
No, you can get, like, pet ones.
I'm giving him a chance to go live in the wild after he shits for us.
You know there's hawks out here, right? That thing's going to be dead before it makes it 100 yards.
But he has a fighting chance. Well, do you just want to keep him as, like, the official mascot? We'll bring him out here every week.
And... You didn't do so well with that cat. I don't know if we can trust you with animals, dude.
That's a good point. But, okay, so rat shit bingo.
Okay.
And what happens if the rat shits, like, on the outside edge of the scorecard? That means I win, right?
Maybe it's closest to the number? Like, we just sort of...
No, he has to actually shit on the number that you win. That's the rule that I just came up with just now.
Are we going to feed him first, or does he just poop whatever he's got
in him? I hope that the pet store feeds him, right? I just want to buy a rat. I don't want to buy, like, food for the rat. What do you even feed a rat? Do you feed a rat regular food?
Probably pellets of mouse food.
You have any?
I got turtle food.
You think he'll eat turtle food? I mean, he's a rat, right?
Yeah, they'll
eat
anything.
Rats eat all kinds of shit, right?
Yeah, they don't give a shit.
Okay, so you bring some turtle food for the rat. We feed the rat a whole lot before the show.
Oh, wait, I got a whole mess of pulled pork in the refrigerator. That makes me shit a whole bunch. Let's give it to the rat. Then I guess the game will be over too quick.
You know, it's hard to gauge whether or not you enjoy this idea or not. You don't like it, do you? Well, I mean, like, whether you really like it or don't enjoy like it at all, it's all pretty much the same.
Kinda. That's my life. But I just don't think you're going to do it, because last time you got a pet, you got rid of that little bastard within a month.
Well, I plan on keeping the rat for about an hour and a half.
Yeah, but, I mean, we can't just let it go outside.
Why can't we?
Because it'll die.
Well, if it dies somewhere else, then it's not our problem, right?
Well, I mean,
it's not. I'm not going to physically kill the rat. I'm going to take the rat to, like, the park and let it go so that it can die somewhere else.
It sounds like you're just trying to church up a murder.
It's not murder. It's not murder if I take a rat to the park and drop it off, is it?
Well, I guess
I'm freeing him from his little glass after he's, you know, shit for me.
Well, yeah, but you could also take that same logic and throw him into the river because he's thirsty and you're just helping him get a drink.
Travis, you don't think it's murder, do you?
Buying a rat and then just leaving it in the wild?
Yeah. That's where rats come from, right?
Not these rats.
Yeah, not pet store rats. They breed.
Sonic Blasphemy in the chat has a great idea. Winner gets to keep the rat. There you go.
I think when he said gets, I think he meant has to.
And that should be for the loser. The loser has to keep the rat.
So the number that is farthest away from the number he shits on.
Yep.
Or we could just feed him a whole mess of pulled pork, and, like, he just keeps shitting all day. And, like, whoever doesn't, like, whoever gets the short straw has to keep him.
What if I just got a little mouse? Maybe it could be mouse shit bingo.
Yeah, we could do that.
We could probably still call it rat shit bingo. They're basically the same thing, right?
What the fuck are we talking about?
That's why we're... Dr. SKL on the Twitters is here, everyone.
Jesus Christ.
Now, let's just do the whole first 15 minutes of the show again and explain it for Drunk because he's late.
All I know is I walk in the room and I see something about Drunk putting rat shit in my mouth and then no scratches at the entire rat. I don't like that idea.
Drunk, you going to eat a rat?
Absolutely no.
Aw. You remember when Drunk was up for saying he was going to do things and then not do them?
Yeah.
Whereas now he just goes out from the get-go and says he's not going to do it.
He's becoming more of an honest person as we go on. You know what I mean? He's just straight up telling you it's not happening.
Now, Drunk. See, when you marry him, then they get some standards and they're like, no, you can't put alcohol in there. That makes me pee funny.
Yes, sir.
So
somebody just do a line over there.
No, I think Drunk probably just like snorted or something
right into the microphone.
Right into it.
Yeah, because he's a professional.
Exactly.
So that wasn't my only great idea this week. You want to hear my other one?
Absolutely.
And I did the anchor effect where I looked it up to make sure that it hasn't been invented yet, and it has been invented. So I'm just going to preface this by saying I came up with a great idea, but then I looked it up and it already exists, so I didn't come up with it. But I was thinking...
So Anchor can look it up anyway?
Like, you do your urinals like they do that game with the water guns at the fair.
Yeah.
Where you squirt in the little hole, and then, like, if you get it up to the top, then you win a little stuffed unicorn.
I do like that idea.
But you make, like, video games that are based on, like, your pee accuracy. So, you know, if you pee in a certain spot in the urinal, there's a little video screen that judges your progress on your pee ability. Or, like, you can pop balloons or something, like, with your pee.
I don't think that'd be good because if it pops, I mean...
Well, no, it's not a physical balloon in the urinal. It's a video game.
I say...
It's like the Wii, only instead of using your hands and wiggling the joystick around, you're shooting your dick pee
and
popping balloons.
Scratch the video game idea, make it a cell phone app.
But you can't pee on your cell phone.
No, I know, but the little... The thing that you're peeing on, that connects to your cell phone.
Oh, you can sync it like Bluetooth?
Right.
That's not bad.
Yeah, then you don't have to buy screens.
Right, right. So you could just get like a little mat on the back of the tarlet.
Right.
That like Bluetooths to your cell phone. And then you know, you can go, hee-hee-hee, I'm going to go to the bathroom. You open the little app, and you go in there, and you Bluetooth it. And then you pee and you pop balloons on your phone with your pee.
Now, when I was little, Mom did something like that to keep me from pissing all over the rim of the toilet seat. And that was to put a cigarette in the turlet so I'd have something to pee on.
Yeah, I do that too. If there's something in the tarlet to pee on,
yeah.
I pee on the object. I like to focus my... And I feel that over the years, I've been training my body so that one day I would be ready for the balloon pop and pee game.
Am I the only one that doesn't pee in urinals?
What do you mean you don't pee in urinals?
I will not pee in a urinal if I have the opportunity to not pee in a urinal.
Why?
Because I keep pissing on myself somehow.
Stand further back.
Oh, like you get real close up to it, you scooch up to it real far so that, well, you don't get any...
Either that or weaken your stream.
Well, the side blinders that they have everywhere I go, like, if they have them...
So you're bashful. You think somebody's going to scope out your gear.
I assume they are. I mean, I'm
so
looking
you get
at
too
it.
Close and then you get splashback. Well, you got to find a happy medium between the two.
Well, also, I have a very good pee stream.
You can lessen the pee stream.
Yeah,
you
up on it a bit.
You can,
man,
control the stream of your pee.
Not really.
No, it's a thing.
Well, do I, like, twist the penis, like twisting a knot in, like, a hose, and then you let it go, and then it all comes out real fast?
Yes, exactly. Yes, sir.
Would you say that you're an aggressive peer?
I know how to control my urine stream, if that's what you're asking.
So you think that you would be a natural for my game?
Right. I can go hard. I can go soft. I mean, whatever you want.
Oh, so you could go hard or soft. That could be another good game, like the strongman competition.
The competition
ferocity
that,
of your pee.
The competition that you definitely would not win.
Oh, no. I got a really weak stream. It's pathetic. But, yeah, like, well, I think you could pick a couple of different games, and I just wouldn't pick that one.
Maybe you got air in your hose.
I'm like an accuracy guy. Like, yeah. If this were, like, medieval times, I'd be, like, an archer. I wouldn't be, like, one of the big guys with
right.
the axe.
I feel like I'm pretty accurate with my urine stream as well.
So you'd be an archer with me?
Yeah.
We'd be on
we'll
the castle
in the back.
Top?
Yeah, behind the wall.
Yeah, and just...
I like it.
Just get some arc. Arrows out there.
Get some arc to it.
Right. Get some arc.
I'd cheat. I'd just take shits. Yeah, I score. Look at that.
Dong! Congratulations!
Oh, he's still going.
Travis.
It's me.
Did you fall asleep?
Us three were just having such a good time.
I didn't. Yeah, I didn't want to interrupt your flow there.
Oh, that! Did you see what he did there? That was good, right? Interrupt your flow.
You can't interrupt the flow. That hurts. I mean, that's not cool.
Travis, the pun master.
But yeah, there was a minor league baseball team that already had these video game things in their urinals. So.
Oh, that sounds great. I'd love to take a piss with my best semi-pro athlete.
Where is this at?
We
have to relook this up.
Oklahoma or Ohio or Oregon.
I'm taking a vacation to one of these O states and fucking playing this video game piss game.
Yeah. The only problem is, I mean, how do you tell the machine that you're done so the guy behind you in line doesn't, like, get... to
finish
take your
you
high
off.
Score, yeah. You know?
It's probably like when you're pumping gas, you know, if you wait too long and hang up the nozzle, you know, the next guy's got a new stream of gas.
Oh, yeah. So I guess once you... But, I mean, you know, people stop and start. And, you know, they have issues with that.
For how long, though? You know?
Yeah,
I mean,
if they're 80
like,
years
rush
old.
Right in?
Maybe you just got to hit the little black button to flush, and that's how they know you're done.
Yeah. Oh, I don't touch that button. That's got, like, dick hands all over it.
Yeah. You type in your initials. you know, like when you go to the Pac-Man machine and you get the high score, you get to type in your initials. But everybody has dick hands, so.
Yeah, they ask you to use your offhand to type with.
the janitor has to go in there with, Purell and Purell the screen.
Oh,
every
I bet that would be the smelliest touchpad ever.
So we are supposed to have a guest around 8:30, and I'm very excited. I know Travis is excited about it.
Very excited, yes.
So that's coming up in just a few minutes. We're gonna try to take a break on time, guys.
Yeah.
So that
I'll probably just turn off my mic and eat food during this.
Oh, is that what you're gonna do?
Yeah.
You're not into it.
I don't even know who this guy is. So.
Oh, there you go.
Well, he doesn't have any input into the show either.
That's true. Yeah. It's funny how, like, Travis has been on the show for, like, 2 months and has already kind of, like...
done everything?
Overtaken both of you on the priority list.
Isn't that why you brought him in?
Well, yeah. Yeah.
So are we doing that now, then, or are we going to do one more little bit?
Do you have a bit?
I have no bit.
Oh, you don't?
I have no bit.
Nothing? I mean, how was your week?
It was fun.
Was it good drunk?
Shut off some firecrackers and whatnot.
Yeah?
Watch some firecrackers.
Did you go to Florissant?
Well, it's right behind my house, so yeah.
That's great. Napier, what did you do for the 4th of July?
I hang out and took shits.
Did you make food?
No.
So how did you take these shits if you didn't make no food?
I bought food at stores.
What?
Yeah.
You don't do that for 4th of July.
Well, you do when you don't want to go out, like, cooking. And all you do is smell gunpowder for, like, 3 days in a damn row.
Travis?
Yes, sir?
What did you do for the 4th?
Well, I had quite a lovely weekend, thank you for asking, Mike. I started it out. We have a wood bat league baseball in our little town here called the Wisconsin Rapids Rafters.
You see this? You see what this is?
So, Travis, you're, like, physically active and whatnot?
Well, I don't play in it. It's it's like a minor. It's like a farm league essentially. So it's like these college kids. They're done with or they're on summer break for college. And then they come and then they play in this like Northwoods League where it's a Woodback League. And
I understand though.
You know, there's plenty of people who've been drafted out of there. I think last year they pulled somebody into the New York Mets and they pulled a couple of this year too. But we went to that and they had a nice, lovely fireworks display Thursday, and then Friday, I took my daughter to see Despicable Me 2, which was free at the movie theater. Had a cookout and then went to the actual fireworks on the 4th. And then I had a nice little fire with the family outside my house and had some drinks. And then yesterday I went back to that Wisconsin Rapids Rafters game and did a little ribbon dance on the field. Had some food with co-workers and some drinks. And then I went to sleep and got up and it was over.
You did a ribbon dance on the field?
I did.
Were you like the drunk guy that ran out into the field in the middle of the game and tased you?
Well, you've seen Semi-Pro with Will Ferrell. Have you?
Didn't he do the same thing in Old School?
No, well, it's the Semi-Pro is that basketball, and then during the basketball games, they always have like a bunch of different promotions. Well, this Woodbat League, this Wisconsin Rapids Rafters baseball game, they do something like every inning. Well, they'll have, like, the ribbon dance, and they'll have, you know, a father-son race around the bases and kind of shit like that. So, like, last night they had, like, a ribbon dance. They put somebody on the first baseline and third baseline, and the first person does a little ribbon dance to, like, a Taylor Swift song, and then the next guy does one to, like, a Sarah McLachlan song, and then the crowd cheers, and they, like, pronounce a winner.
Did you win?
No.
Oh. Ugh.
It was a disappointment.
How was your weekend, Mike? What did you do?
This isn't about me. It's about
Travis.
You always get offended when you ask everybody else and then nobody asks you. So
I was just thoroughly impressed that Travis was able to contribute to the show in some meaningful way.
Yeah.
That's really neat.
It is neat.
Wow.
You should get two more guys like him.
All right, guys, we're going to go to break. We will be back in 5 minutes with our guests.
This is what you may have missed on the most recent episode of Not Safe for Water Coolers.
Do tell!
It's called a flaming hog.
It's actually kind of a pretty painful medical condition. I've got a lot of specialists about it.
Yeah, and it's all from my pants.
Shannon, would you get on the same goddamn pain?
Ew! Mandy Weaver's lumpy.
She would, like, take her knuckle and just kind of grind it into my taint.
What did you hate as a child but now love as an adult?
Black people. Hey, guys, I've got to go. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Let me put my fucking fountain pen away, I guess.
Download past episodes on Stitcher or iTunes, or listen Tuesday nights on RadioFubar.com.
Hello, and welcome back to the Wheelbarrow Full of Dicks Internet Radio Program. I am Mike, joined by Napier Drunk. Travis, are you still there?
Travis is still here.
Travis is here, and we are joined by Connor Rickman and Whit Hertford of Wildlife.
How's it going?
How's it going, guys?
Good, good, good.
Did you see this potato salad guy?
On Kickstarter, yeah. I saw something about it. What is it?
Doesn't it just irritate you? I mean, the guy's asked for $10 to make some potato salad. And what was it up to, Travis? We just looked at it a little while ago.
He is now at $37,000 with 25 days to go.
That's a lot of potato salad.
I mean, like, here you guys are. You're trying to make something legitimate. You're trying to make, like, a movie, tell a story. And this guy just wants to make some potato salad.
Yeah, you're putting salt in the wound, man.
I could have made him some potato salad. I would have gone to his house.
You know, here's the thing. Not to, like, alienate anybody, so I'll be incredibly generic and overgeneralize. We're not the smartest species. You know what
I mean? I will alienate and overgeneralize. I will say that the guy who started that Kickstarter is a genius, and everybody who donated $37,000 to his Kickstarter should be ashamed of themselves.
but that's the thing. That's why we have real, not to be like get all philosophical, right? But that's why we have reality TV. That's why we've got kind of a sloppy like Cineplex slate of movies. Is that like people actually think it's kind of funny to screw it all up?
Well, and that was a question that I was going to ask you. Is that Hollywood is so far away from the golden age embrace of like the Miramax Kevin Smith era of like big low budget releases? How is it even possible to put these smaller stories in front of people? I mean, is that essentially why you've kind of branched out and decided to write your own material and then obviously turned to Kickstarter to try to fund that, since I would imagine independent financing is a lot harder to come by than it used to be?
Yeah, I mean, Kickstarter is one way to do it, but I mean, even if the whole project goes tits up, we're still going to make it somehow. You know, we'll sell some plasma or something. You know, we will find a way. And, you know, and it's like, you know, we could maybe ask a couple of rich people for money. Right now we're asking a bunch of poor people for money.
Make some damn potato salad.
Yeah. Clearly I'm in the wrong business. I should have gotten my PhD in potato salad. And,
well, the thing is like, as jaded as I am, as much of like a curmudgeon I am at times, I actually do really firmly and maybe to a default am hopeful that the rest of the planet is populated with people that have the same kind of hearts and brains that I have, more or less, probably more brains than I have, but that they want stories that resonate and, you know, stay with you, that they actually make an impact, the movies of our childhood and movies that actually made us like movies. I still think those can be made. I just think that we have to be a little louder. We have to be a little angrier, and we have to actually just not really, in words of network, you know, not take it sitting down.
Well, there's been plenty of people, I think, who found their niche in creating smaller movies. I think like the Duplass brothers, you know,
right,
are ones that come to mind right off the bat. And all they do is make, you know, really small movies. I mean, hour and 20 minutes of two characters kind of just traveling around bullshitting, you know, but the stories are generally endearing, and those are the kind of movies, like me being a movie lover, that those are the ones that stick with me for a couple of days, rather than, as much as I really do like going to the Cineplex and grabbing a pair of 3D glasses and watching, you know, the fifth incarnation of Spider-Man in 10 years, I enjoy that as an experience, but not so much as, you know, a story that I'm actually going to get something from.
And I think it's cyclical. I think the worst thing is to kind of be a defeatist and to say like, oh, all hope is gone, it's a lost cause, we're never going to get it back. I think it really goes in waves. And, you know, if you look at historically, there was a time when, you know, the people of the Scorseses and Coppolas and Spielberg and Lucas, they were making movies that were new and challenging, that were a lot more about, at least early Spielberg, were a lot more about characters and story, and that was a little bit foreign to audiences. And then again, you mentioned Kevin Smith, and you mentioned, you know, that era. It came back, and I think the exciting news is that I think guys like us, hopefully, are going to be jumping into the lineup and catching the new wave.
Well, and I think you're right, too, because I think that, you know, that there is a batch of filmmakers right now, too, and they're getting major press now. I mean, obviously, J.J. Abrams is a huge force, but you can see, you know, Spielberg-esque qualities to everything he does, where it's, you know, you feel like Super 8. You know, it felt like a homage to E.T. You have guys like Rian Johnson, who you know, did Looper, which felt like it was a genre piece, but
right,
it was a good story, you know. So you have these filmmakers that are and they're starting to get, you know, out there a little bit more because they're being offered things like Star Wars and Star Trek. But they're people who actually have a story in mind, and I think that's ushering in opportunities, you know, for guys like you who want to tell that story, you know, that emotional tale, to actually be able to succeed.
I think what has happened in the past has been, it used to be your access to the infrastructure
that sort of was the filter for making films. And recently, in the last 10 years, with the big film, you know, film and video technology boom, kind of everyone can be a filmmaker just by having an iPhone. And it's such a, you know, it's freeing. It's great. You know, it gives everybody an opportunity. But what it does is it passes the responsibility of filtering what content you want to see and what content you will digest and take into your own life and what will have an effect on you. It passes that responsibility onto the viewer. And that's not something that viewers have ever really been used to. We kind of had these established systems in place to say, like, okay, if a studio is releasing it, it must be good. And now so many small independent studios essentially are releasing so much content that it's fallen on the viewer to determine what they consider to be viewable. And it's a responsibility that is so new, it's, I think it's going to take a little while for people to get used to. But I think it's an exciting future because it puts the power in the hands of the viewer, which, you know, call me a socialist if you want, but I think it's a pretty great thing.
Yeah, and I think there's probably one thing right now that is firing on all cylinders that's generally accepted, that is the voice of the people, that is accurate, and that actually does speak up for films that matter. And that's a thing like Rotten Tomatoes. You know, everyone cites that and sources that because it's pretty foolproof. And I think that's because people's voices are heard, and they get to judge it and gauge their own opinions up against everybody else's.
To bring it back to the movie that you guys are actually making, sort of broadly, to the thing that jumped out at me when I watched the video is you don't really give anything away, actually, what the movie is about. It's very it's vague, and I assume you did that on purpose, and I like that just because I'm tired of seeing the whole movie in the movie trailer. Like, Napier, you remember that movie with the Rachel McAdams that she got Harrison Ford to be the TV anchor? No, you don't remember that.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. The Good Morning America.
The whole movie was in the trailer.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, I don't know why I ended up going and seeing that movie. But
why did you watch that movie?
I did. I saw it. It was awful. But the whole movie was in the trailer. That they summed it up in 2 minutes. And when I watched the video that you posted, I mean, I got a vibe as to, you know, kind of the tone, but I didn't actually get any of the info. I mean, it seemed kind of like it might be like a Hatfields versus McCoys type thing. I don't really know exactly what it was.
Good. And that's the point, because then I think not only is interest peaked, then people come back for more and we'll parse out a little bit more update by update on purpose. But I also am with you 100%. I don't really want people, even in a crowdfunding campaign, to have a full grasp of the movie. I think that that's where, you know, Zach Braff, Veronica Mars, there's a whole slew of reasons why that isn't a fantastic thing. But one of those reasons is because they really were desperate and they really threw it all out there and they seemed like they were kind of begging with no real like material to beg with. And that movie's already gotten slammed. The Braff one's already gotten slammed. It's got terrible reviews. It's going to, again, sour people on Kickstarter. And for guys like Connor and myself and Ryan, our director, it's like, well, look, we only have story to come at you with this. I mean, yeah, we have Heater and we have a couple people that make you go, oh, okay, they're not completely random. But John is not in a place where he is going to be any sort of like fluff in this performance, or he's going to, I'm probably one of three guys in the world that can say, John, if you make a corny joke right now, I'm going to punch you in the ball.
Well, and that was another question I had, is this doesn't seem like a comedy.
It's not a comedy at all.
You kind of come from like a comedic background, and John Heater, of course, was Napoleon Dynamite. I mean, if you came to me and said, hey, I'm going to make a gritty, you know, drama, and I'm going to cast Napoleon Dynamite as a sheriff, I have questions about that. That's
and then also add Lauren Lapkus as his wife,
his Mormon wife. I mean, we do things in this movie that are just enough that it's going to make people teeter on their uncomfortability. But We're not doing anything to alienate or have an agenda or, you know, I don't have any big soapbox I'm standing on. I just wanted to be genuine about the people here, the people that I know live in Utah, in that middle section of the demographic that's never, ever cinematically been aptly portrayed. And I feel like it's a pretty specific and cool corner of the world, just like, or the country, just like Fargo took Minnesota Nice, and nobody really knew that as a specific thing until that film. That's my favorite movie, is Fargo. And so there was a lot of that and the writing of Sam Shepard that influenced Wildlife, 20 years ago when I started writing notes on this. But yeah, I come from a comedic background. John comes from where he comes from. But that's what's exciting to me, is that nothing is ever worthwhile unless you continually invent and create and surprise people. And thank heaven for John Heater that he's willing to completely face plant in a good way this time. He's done face planting with Rob Schneider, thank heaven. but he's ready to do it in a way he's never done it before. I mean, are we allowed to swear on this thing?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yep.
Okay, so the script has the word fuck on it every two pages because there are meth dealers, there are metalheads in this movie. They don't talk nice. And John Heater is a pretty straight-laced dude in his real life, but he knows a good script when he reads it because he gets a lot of bad ones. And he read it and he said, I'm not offended, I'm ready to go. This is the left turn I need to take. And I said, good, because I wrote this for you. And if you had said no, I would have been pissed off.
You wrote it with him in mind?
Yeah, I was living in John's house from July to October of last year. I was in his guest house as like the weird uncle in the back.
I know that it's interesting to look at a film like this and think, okay, Martin Lapkus is a funny person, John Heater's a funny person, how can they pull off a serious movie like this? But that was exactly what everybody was saying when Tarantino put Travolta in a movie where he wasn't disco dancing.
Well, and Robin Williams too, I guess.
Exactly.
When he was the creepy photo guy.
I think actors are at their best when they're being stretched beyond what they are comfortable with and what their audiences are comfortable with. It challenges both the performer and the actor, or performer and the audience.
It's the old Bill Murray equation, and it works, but it doesn't work with everybody. I studied at the Upright Citizens Brigade in Los Angeles for about 5-7 years, and I did okay, but I clearly didn't like break through the comedy walls because I'm a freaky looking guy. I come from the Steve Buscemi, Paul Giamatti school of jacked up faces. And so what I spent most of my time at UCB doing was watching from afar the people that I felt like Lauren, like Matt Jones, who's on Breaking Bad and who did our debut movie, feature length, Dreamworld. And he is not Badger the Stoner from Breaking Bad in that. He's not a complete burnout. He's a multifaceted character. He plays my character's high school bully, and they finally get to confront one another 15 years later. And it's a moment that really happened in my real life when I was at 24 Hour Fitness, and my real high school bully had me in a headlock as adult men, and I thought my life was going to end, and he actually just wanted to chum out. And it was a really like heartwarming, touching moment. And so I presented that to Matt Jones. And, you know, there's certain kinds of comedic actors that, because they never get this type of material, when somebody takes a flyer on them and endows them with supreme confidence, they thrive. And it's a very exciting moment. And it's what I continually try to do.
Well, going back to the pitch video itself, I know that Mike actually had texted me the link to it and said, you know, these would be, you know, some interesting guys to talk to. And I actually watched it during work, you know, because I had wanted to brush up on and see what you guys were doing. And I mean, what is it, about a 6-minute pitch video?
Yeah.
The video itself, although you don't really talk about what the movie is outside of, like, the environment and how it's almost you know, it's the wrong side of the tracks kind of a thing. The pitch video itself, to me, felt like a short film. It felt like a narrative. So when I was done with it, I got a sense of, although maybe not the story, about the tone you were going for. And I, to be completely honest, as soon as that song kicks in at the end when the pitch video was over, I truthfully got goosebumps when it was done.
That's our good friend Joshua James.
Yeah, Josh is Josh is from the land, and he is the love child of Bon Iver and Bob Dylan. He's the real deal. I have no idea why he's not gigantically famous outside of the fact that he chooses not to be. He's turned down huge record contracts to be able to independently put out his music and kind of live on his farm here in rural Utah and be kind of a real man of the soil here, very much salt of the earth. And when you talk to him, he's a unique guy that's not faking it at all, but he feels sort of old world frontier. And he's going to kill in this movie. I mean, he's pulling a Tom Waits in that he's never acted a day before in his life. And I'm handing him over, frankly, my favorite role in the script. The one I'm playing is not even my favorite role. His is. And that just shows you either, A, I'm insane, or B, I like to do things that usually pan out. And I like jumping off the high dive. I like skydiving from a great height and doing something with a huge potential to fail. I like doing that. And his music is a huge character of this movie. The way that video looks is all accredited to the guy sitting next to me, Connor Rickman. And the cool thing about Sneak Attack and what we try to do to not over, you know, glorify ourselves, but is that it's individuals, including and specifically Ryan Darst, the director, and my partner, the Wayne to my Garth. He's a visionary that wears cargo shorts. He doesn't have an air about him, but he's a guy that definitely needs to be seen and heard. And I've lived probably 7 of my 9 cat lives in only 35 years. And so I have a lot of stuff I want to say cinematically. So we're going to do this, and we're going to do it the way we want to do it, with zero compromises. And that's how we took a movie like Dreamworld that was made on blood, sweat, tears, insanity, and only $7,000. And we got it to Amazon and iTunes. And that's gigantic for a little movie like that that didn't get to any first-tier festival. So we have success doing it. We needed better pieces, and I needed to write this script, which required me moving up to this place and disassociating myself from an LA zip code. And I'll tell you what, it was the greatest idea I've ever had.
So with a movie like this, you know, you said you'd started writing it a long time ago. Did you start with the location? Did you start with Utah and say, I want to set a movie here? Or did the story just lend itself to be told there? I know you said that, you know, it's about a group of people, you know, or a sect of people that live in that place. But I mean, was there a story in mind, or did you just look at the place and say, I need to put something here?
Well, 20 years ago when I was in college, not 20, 15, I'm dating myself, but I read Lie of the Mind, True West, and Fool for Love, all Sam Shepard plays. And they really spoke to me how he was the voice of this Western sort of fictitious place, the desert, the mountains. And he's just always been very inspirational to me. And when I saw Fargo, I thought, well, that seems like that's kind of in the same boat. You know, they're both taking a subsect and showing all the colors and not really making any sort of judgments to be like, these guys are dorks or dimwits and these are the ones you should root for, that everybody kind of gets a fair shake. So between that, between some stuff that happened in my real life a year ago where I got a really close front row seat to, not to be a complete downer, but abuse and mental illness and just getting really shocked to what close relationships, how they can unravel, how they can get really scary. And so I guess the thing that was the cincher was that I went, well, the light moments in Wildlife, which were still, you know, scraps, they were sort of, I write in scenelets and then I try to kind of string them together. At least that's how I did this one. And I thought, you know, you take the Oh You Betchas and the Heck Do You Mean from Fargo, and you substitute that with the gosh darn gall of Utah County, And that seemed like a pretty easy switch up. And sure. So that kind of happened, and it started to write itself as soon as I moved here. I had what I now was a really, really terrible, rough first third of the screenplay. But then when I got my feet actually in the dirt here, it went really, really fast. And it's interesting, when we walked down to Springville, when I was kind of looking at the places there and being in that actual town, there were people coming out wondering what this guy was doing in his Scion, just cruising their train tracks. I told him, I said, it's hopefully for a movie about Springville and all the sides of the tracks, good, bad, light, and dark. And they were thrilled. And I got goosebumps. I thought, this is a cultural thing that could happen here, where not only does Springville get to get a little bit of the spotlight, but Utah County, small town America. And I think that sometimes is done in a very homogenized way as far as Hollywood standards. And people don't really reach in and pull out the guts, because Hollywood doesn't need to do that. They need to do what is the bare minimum to make their big dollars. And usually that doesn't require laying it all out on the altar. But like I said, I've done a lot of stuff in my life already, and I don't have a desire to be famous, but I have a desire to tell stories. And so that's why I think this comes from a different point of view.
Well, I'm really excited to see what the story is too, because just if the same guy is shooting the movie that shot the pitch video, I mean, just from a stylistic point of view, it looks like it's going to be really something to take in.
The guy who's shooting the actual film is about 10 times better than I am, so you're going to see just about the best looking version of Utah you've ever seen in a movie.
But the cool thing though is, like, you know, Connor is kind of producer boy here, and he's the brains behind the operation, but he does have an eyeball, and he does know he's acted a little bit too. Ryan has acted a little bit too. I've directed a little bit too. So it's a real, you know, collaborative effort. And I've made efforts to meticulously cast people that want to be part of basically a theater repertory on film. And that's what we try to do each time out.
And that's kind of more along the lines of the all hands on deck, you know, everybody pitching in with every bit of the movie to make the best thing that possibly can be, rather than you have your job, I have my job, and, you know, we walk away at the end.
Totally. I mean, when we are talking to people that could potentially land us larger sums of money, I think about things that I've been accustomed to from when I was a whippersnapper, things like trailers and stuff like that. I'm actually grossed out by that. I don't want trailers, and I don't want people to check in and check out in between scenes. I want this to be like a play, and I want everybody to be all in all the time. And when we've done that, when we did that with Dreamworld, when we did that with a heist, sort of if Wes Anderson had directed the Bourne movies, we did a thing called The Caper Kind with John and I. We're the head of this kind of DIY heist team that Kyle Mooney from SNL, he was a part of that film. And we tried to make it a web series, but again, nobody really takes risks on things that are good right now. So we kind of got shelved, but we have put that into play where everybody is there, and the luxuries, it's not like we're trying to make anybody feel punished, but the luxuries and the perks are at a very bare minimum so that everybody is dialed in at all times. And it's great. I mean, again, I bring up Wes Anderson. That guy puts people in tents and in the same hotel. And these are people that are doing giant, giant movies, but they love going to film camp. And they love being part of that environment where people are eating meals together and they're not cloistering themselves in a corner.
And they love to be symmetrical, right in the middle of the frame at all times.
Exactly.
Well, that's the thing. It's got to be fairly boring to just be the actor guy that shows up to set, and you say your three lines, you walk away, and then they don't call you back, or maybe they call you back a little bit too early.
Yeah, you know, when I did, and I had a fun time on this show, but I mean, I'll out them because it's the complete opposite. I did the first season of Glee, and I did the third episode when nobody knew that it was going to be gigantic, and the kids were still pretty normal human beings at that point. I got there, and I had a huge monologue to deliver, and I was pretty nervous, and I didn't even get a rehearsal. It was basically like, here's your mark. You better nail it, and it better be the funniest damn thing we've ever seen. If not on take one, then definitely by take two, or you may not be in this episode. And that amount of pressure and stress is not for everybody, and really, really doesn't lend itself to quality with any sort of longevity. I think that that's very short-lived, and it's very canned, and it's hurtful to the art form. The art form needs to be breathed. It needs to have energy and life, and you know, we're still on Kickstarter, but the girl that plays my love interest in this film, we've already spent a lot of time in the mountains, improvising as characters, asking.
Is that code?
No. We don't Blue Valentine it. We get close. Mary-Kate and I, during Dreamworld, we really did spend a lot of time together, and I really kind of saw Mary-Kate as a lovely human being, and we had a bit of a crushy crush going on during that filming, and so you watch that movie and you're kind of watching a pseudo documentary, and you know, it's not ideal for the personal life, so you need to be able to turn it off and on, especially if you have a significant other, but I think you got to at least push yourself and do the things that are scary. If you do anything that's safe in this art form, I think that you're really looking to be disappointed.
Well, thank you guys for doing this. I set up a website just to make it easier for people to find. It's just tinyurl.com/WFODwild. So if you do want to check out the Kickstarter, just go there or just Google it, I guess. But yeah,
and the Kickstarter runs through July 25th.
Correct. 25th. Yeah. Thanks, guys, for doing that. That's really nice of you.
No problem. And
absolutely. Hey, give me one quick second. I would feel bad if I didn't bring this up, Whit. I brought up.
Oh no.
No,
is this the Nightmare on Elm Street 5 question?
It's come up on the show a couple of times in the last couple of weeks that I'm going to see Robert Englund in full Freddy garb in Chicago.
Wow.
At August 8th. He's doing like a one-night thing. And I think the guy, Robert Kurtzman, I believe, is applying the makeup for it. And he, I think, was the makeup artist on Nightmare on Elm Street 5, the Dream Child. And you were the titular Dream Child in that motion picture.
I've never had the word titular paired with me ever.
Well, I want to tell you that as a 9-year-old, and I shouldn't have been in the theater probably, but when you first came on screen, I was very jealous, and I was like, who is this kid who's only a couple of years older than me who gets to be Freddy Krueger's kid in this movie? You know, it was...
Well, look, buddy, how often did you get beat up in school?
Quite a bit.
Okay, then we did have very similar lives. I was going to say that's the trade-off. You know, my friends went to soccer practice.
Oh, I was going to say that was a prerequisite.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry I made you jealous. I'm a pretty...
No, that's all right. Well, you have a long list of credits, and I guess really the question was is, you know, as many different projects as you've been associated with, is like, what is it like to be associated with, even in the small part, of a genre franchise? I mean, I know Jurassic Park and those kind of things. I mean, is it something that is endearing? I mean, do you embrace that, or is it just kind of like that was a job I had when I was, you know, way back in the day?
Well, I think I'd be an asshole if I wasn't grateful, right? So
sure.
I definitely see it from the fan point of view. I definitely realize that it could have been the Ernest movies instead. And,
oh, that would have been awesome.
But at least, you know, it was fucking Jurassic Park and a part of the Nightmare legacy. And I'm honored by that. I hope that that's not when I peaked. That's the only thing I hope to hell that that's not what's on my tombstone. But yeah, I'd be remiss to not be 100% grateful and all those things, even the corny 90s sitcoms I learned stuff from, and I've taken it with me. Robert Englund, you know, I'm only a year older than you, FYI. I was only 10 when I did that.
Okay.
And when I did it at a time when my dad had just passed away in a really horrific, sudden manner 6 months before we started shooting. And credit to my mom, she didn't let us sit around and mope. She said, let's keep ourselves active and busy, and let's keep making life choices. And so I did that movie very, very intrigued and not scared, intrigued by the makeup. And, you know, they had like 3 airplane hangars worth of sets. It was gigantic. And I was really thrilled with working on that movie. And Robert was a good man, and really took me under his wing. And Steve Hopkins was one of the most amazing directors I've ever worked with. He, you know, bought me a skateboard on my last day, and that to a 10-year-old kid is gold. So I know that I'll probably, until I'm dead, have those credits associated to my name, but that's okay, because it's all part of the experience and the tapestry. I just hope that I get to do some stuff that I think is a little closer to me rather than being a hired hand.
Well, I think judging by this project, I don't think you have any, there's really no chance of you ever being, you know, labeled that kid that did that movie. So I don't think you have to worry about that.
Well, thanks. My neck beard and my B cup man boobs are not childlike anymore.
Cool. Well, thanks again, guys. tinyurl.com/WFODwild.
Thanks, guys. We really appreciate it.
Take it easy.
Thank you, guys.
Travis. You had more Nightmare on Elm Street 5 questions.
I didn't. I just wanted to feed him that. I wanted to feed him that general one and see if he would, like, just, you know,
were you
offer
satisfied?
Some stuff up. I was very satisfied. I didn't expect a lot from it. You know what I mean? That'd be like asking me what I did when I was 10 years. Well, no, it wouldn't, because I didn't star in Nightmare on Elm Street 5 when I was 10 years old. But, I mean, guy's done a lot of stuff since then. So I'm completely satisfied with the information that I got from that that poke.
You know, I forget a lot. Anchor put in the chat, did Samuel L. Jackson call him a motherfucker? I forget that Samuel L. Jackson was in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he did have a significant role. I mean, he was in it for most of the movie.
Didn't he get eaten by a Tyrannosaurus Rex?
Did Samuel L. Jackson get eaten?
I know he got... Well, maybe I'm thinking of Deep Blue Sea, where that shark just comes and, like, eats him in half out of nowhere.
I guess he wasn't on the Jeep that escaped, so I guess at some point he had to get eaten, right? But I don't remember him being eaten.
Yeah, I think only the main guy, Sam Neill, and the kids made it out, maybe?
And the grandpa.
Oh, and the grandpa.
Who died in the book, but lived in the...
Well, you can't kill Grandpa in the movie.
And Jeff Goldblum, he lived too.
Oh, that's right.
Although I think he almost got it.
Truthfully, like, I really am excited about this wildlife. You know, when you had brought it up to me, I wasn't sure what it was until I watched the pitch video.
I still don't know what it is. We just talked to the guy for a half hour, and I still have no idea what it is.
Right, but it seems like it's being put together by some interesting fellows. And like I said, that pitch video, it really did remind me of, like, it felt like I watched a short film, and I'm excited to see more from, you know, whoever put that together, so.
I was kind of hoping that I would edge him in the direction of, tell me what this movie is about.
What is this movie? Is it Romeo and Juliet meets what, Reservoir Dogs? It's a heist movie? I don't...
You know, I watched Varsity Blues was on TV last night, and I ended up watching the second half of it.
Sure.
And, you know, because if Varsity Blues is on TV, you usually end up watching it.
I enjoy Varsity Blues very much.
And, you know, throughout that movie, they constantly go back to the giant John Voight statue.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? The giant, the Bud Kilmer statue.
Right.
And it never moved because it was too heavy. What do you think happened to that statue? I assume it probably wasn't bronze. It was probably a prop. It was probably made out of styrofoam or something.
Or plastic.
Yeah. But, like, where is it now?
It is in John Voight's. He's got a fountain in his backyard, and I think it's the middle of the fountain.
And, I mean, like, at the end of the most recent Batman movie, there was a big Batman statue. Don't you think it'd be cool if we just had, like, a museum or a park or something that had all of the statues from movies, just like a movie prop statue park.
Like a Madame Tussauds wax museum, but with all the movie statues.
Like, you saw this giant John Voight statue. Now come see it.
It's probably made out of paper mache and, like, chicken wire.
Well, then you'd have to put it indoors, I guess. Or do you think that was CGI? Think that was CGI?
They weren't using CGI in Varsity Blues.
No.
For a John Voight statue.
You don't think they CGI'd a John Voight statue?
Seems like a lot probably of painted John Voight statue.
Don't you think it'd be a lot cheaper to CGI a John Voight statue than to actually make one?
No, they painted him brown and they made him stand on like a stool, and then they shot a couple of different, you know, a couple of different shots of that, and there you are.
Well, I mean, it didn't look entirely like him. It looked like an artist's interpretation of a John Voight.
What would your artist's interpretation of a John Voight look like?
I mean, it would probably look something like John Voight, but not like exactly like John Voight.
It would probably look like a stick figure if I did it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So that's what we need to post on the web later is Drunk's artist interpretation of John Voight.
Yep.
Before I want to see that.
Before
Please
you leave,
do
you're
going
to have to draw a picture.
I can do it right
John
now.
Voight.
Give me your paper.
You're gonna, well, this is my notes for the show.
We'll do it on the back.
We're doing the show.
Make him say something. You got to give him a like little word bubble. Like, give him a line from Varsity Blues or something.
No, he needs a word bubble that says, I'm John Voight.
Okay. Just so there's no mistake about it, what we're looking at.
Wow, Drunk. That is about as basic a stick figure as a person can draw. He is smiling, though. So
he's
I mean,
smiling.
John Voight does smile from time to time.
I don't think he smiled in that movie.
In Varsity Blues?
No, not once.
No, he's just chewing gum really, really fast the whole time.
And angrily. He's angrily chewing gum.
So did we get to Hollywood movie thingamabob?
Oh, do you want to talk about that?
Sure.
Travis crashed and burned, baby.
Did
Travis,
he?
You were the first overall pick, weren't you?
You son of a bitch. Yeah, of course I was.
And you took
Transformers. Transformers. I took Transformers because I thought Mark Wahlberg would bring some of his grade-A acting to the series, and the franchise would be rejuvenated, and critics and people worldwide would embrace it, not only with their dollars, but also with their hearts.
Well, they embraced it with their dollars. That's for sure. Because Transformers made $175 million.
Jeebies.
Which Boom. Is the biggest performer so far.
Yep.
By a lot.
So you're saying Think Like a Man 2 did not make $175
million. No, no. Think Like a Man 2 did not make $175 million.
Damn it.
However, Transformers 4's Metacritic score...
Let me take a guess. 34.
32.
Ooh.
32,
I wish I could have had Drunks.
32% of critics favorably reviewed.
But that's only 1 week, though, right?
No, it's done.
That's done.
It's done. So Transformers 4 brought Travis 56 points.
Didn't it get less points than fucking Neighbors?
Yeah, that was the worst performing of your three movies. You had
and it made $180 million.
Because you had one in the 90s and one in the 70s.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you shit the
whoa,
bed.
Whoa, whoa. Why is my face in the middle of the red shit
you're,
bingo?
You're the free space. You're the free space, Drunk.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so...
So, Mike, where does that leave me, where does that leave me though? Like, you, I'm still, like, kicking ass, right?
You have 190 total points. You are the first one completely done.
So, what happened? Who's closest to me, you or Dan?
Me and Napier both have a pretty good chance of catching you.
No, what has Napier got?
Napier needs 70 points from Sin City 2 and Expendables 3 combined. I think that he can probably do that.
You think so?
I think between the two of them, he can come up with 70 points. And I need 56 points from Ninja Turtles.
No.
So I need Ninja Turtles to do better than The Fault in Our Stars.
Did anybody have that Tammy movie?
No, nobody had Tammy.
Did that do anything?
No, it did not do that great. But I think.
Well, Mike left off like 50 movies from the summer to choose from. He like didn't include them in the choices.
Oh, fantastic!
Are you mad?
Why would anybody?
Oh yeah, I didn't put Tammy in the choices, and I didn't put the Purge movie, which that might not have been a terrible pick actually. The Purge because. It's getting a lot of clock on the commercials on TV.
I like that first one.
Yeah, it was okay.
Yeah, and it wasn't great, but it's fun.
That movie where the broad is the zombie, that looks okay too.
That's that with Aubrey Plaza?
Yeah, she's a
Life
zombie.
Life After Beth.
Yeah, I didn't put that in there too. I think they announced that late. I just went down the list of movies that are coming out, and they didn't talk about those.
I will say that female comedy movies normally do really bad.
Why is that, Napier?
Bridesmaids did awesome.
Yeah, Bridesmaids did great.
Yeah, Napier. But that's the one that did good.
Melissa McCarthy?
Yeah.
She puts out the same movie every 6 months, and everybody goes and sees it every 6 months.
Yeah, because she's the Lady Chris Farley now, apparently.
She's putting out the same movie, and everybody's like, look,
accurate description.
That is. She is the Lady Chris Farley.
But watch what happens. I mean, look what happened with Vince Vaughn. He made the same exact Vince Vaughn movie for 2 years in a row and totally petered out after the first year.
Yeah, but he made money, so.
Well, yeah, good for him. I'm not saying that's a bad thing.
I think Vince Vaughn's downfall was when he tried to go PG-13.
Yeah.
And everybody was like, you're faking it, Vince Vaughn.
Right. Vince Vaughn can't go PG-13. He can't even read a script. How can he go PG-13?
He got kind of fat, too.
Yeah, he did.
He looks like somebody like filled him up with water.
I think he did a really good job in Old School, and everybody just assumed he was going to keep doing that.
And he did.
Yeah.
Without the swears.
So, Rat Shit Bingo.
Rat Scat Bingo next
rat
week,
Rat Scat
right?
Bingo next week, guys.
What else do we have next week, Mike?
Next week, we have an interview with another filmmaker. His name's Philip Bach.
Yeah.
So that'll be exciting. I'll be posting links to that so you guys can check that out.
Fantastic.
Is there anything else that anybody wants to talk about? I think that this whole Robin Thicke thing is bullshit.
I don't know what that means.
Like, he made an album to get his wife back, and he keeps going on TV, and like before he starts his song to promote his album, he like dedicates it to his wife, and like the name of his album is about his wife. And I saw a news article about how his album is tanking and how his wife definitely won't take him back now because his album tanked. Like his wife is sitting at home going, oh, well, if his album hits a certain amount, then I'll certainly take him back. But no, if it doesn't hit that sales figure, then fuck him, I'm done.
So did he hit her? Or?
No, I think he cheated on her a lot.
Oh,
well, yeah, of course.
And I exactly right.
You're Robin Thicke. Of course you cheated on
right.
your wife.
But no, so but I think that this, and I hate to say it because I mean he's probably bummed out that his wife left him, sure. But I think that a certain bit of this might just be a little bit of a play to the camera. Like I got caught. You guys saw that my wife left me. I'm going to make the whole apology tour, and I'm going to make an album about her and stuff. I think it's all bullshit. I think it's all a sham.
That's what those Canadians do.
I completely agree with you, Mike, because if Alan Thicke was your dad and he could give you one of those sweet speeches that he used to give to Kirk Cameron, I think you'd be aces. You know, you wouldn't be worried about that wife leaving you anymore.
You just get the speech and you'd be like, yeah.
It's the Seaver speech.
Things can't
solid.
Be all that bad.
Right. You, everybody's going to go through a few growing pains, so, you know, you're solid.
I don't know. I think a certain little bit of it is a little bit of an act. I think he's playing it up. Like, the whole music video is like him, you know, just standing. And speaking of goddamn music videos, not to go off on a little bit of a tangent here, but that The Lord has a new music video, and The Lord stands in the center of the frame, and the background behind her is black. It's just her staring at the camera. And throughout the song, there are times where she says, yeah. And that's the only part that she lip syncs. So she does the whole video with her mouth closed, just staring at you. For like 4 minutes, you just watch this woman stare at you. And then whenever in the song she goes, yeah, then she goes, yeah. and then it goes back to staring at you. And that's the whole video. It's not like they cut to other things and go back to her staring. That's it.
Well, now I have to watch this video.
You seem rather upset by this.
I am. It's retarded. It's stupid.
Do you think like they were supposed to like make like inner shots like they would film?
But they ran out of money or something?
Or they just said, you know what, fuck it, we got this one take and we'll just go with
it. We gotta get this Lord video out now.
I think that down the road, we're gonna find out that like some of these people have just been fucking with us. Like, I think that Kanye West is fucking with us. I think that Kanye West is completely aware of Kanye West's image. I think Kanye West is at home laughing his ass off at what we think of him, because I think he's just fucking with us. I don't think he's actually doing any of the weird things that he does. That last album that he put out was fucking ridiculous. It was just stupid. And everybody got all excited about it and talked about how great it was. And I think he's laughing his ass off. I think he's like, I made that as a goof just to see if you guys would say it was genius. And you did.
It's the music equivalent of a potato salad Kickstarter.
Kanye West's last album is the music equivalent of the potato salad Kickstarter.
Maybe he just really hates his fans. He couldn't put out a CD of him just saying, fuck you.
But his fans thought it was brilliant. He sent out an album with a clear case, no album art, nothing on the CD itself. He sent out a blank CD in a blank case, and millions of people bought it.
Is that the one where he had the line, there's no better rap lyric ever, and that was supposed to be the best rap lyric? Is there like a line in there where he says there's never been a better rap song or rap lyric in the history of rap?
Probably.
I'm sure that was on there.
Yeah, and I mean, like the song where he hurry up with my damn croissants. I mean, it's ridiculous. The whole thing is fucking retarded.
Did you listen to the whole CD?
I did.
That sounds like a you problem.
It sounds like a me problem?
Yeah.
Did you listen to it?
Fuck no. You kidding me, Kanye? Get out of here.
But I just... And The Lord. I think The Lord put out that video to see if people would say it was brilliant.
It probably is brilliant. You're just a curmudgeon.
Maybe she was channeling Andy Kaufman when he did that Mighty Mouse theme song thing.
That's kind of what it was like. It was very similar to that. Only like kind of like a goth version.
Maybe she was going for like chuckles.
Think she was going for chuckles?
Yeah. She's branching out. You know how some the singers, they get into acting like the Jessica Simpson with her booty shorts.
With their booty shorts?
Yeah. That's her way of, like, you know, putting out feelers. See you in hell, faggots.
I want you to know it's over.
Well. Bye.
Hey, it's Napier. Join us Mondays, 9-8 Central on RadioFubar.com. Join to chat or download the TuneIn app for smartphones and listen to it that way. Download our show on Stitcher, iTunes, Zune, whatever the fuck you want. No, they don't make Zunes. Or from RadioFubar.com. Rate us on iTunes or Stitcher or fucking Facebook. By the way, you can follow us on Facebook.com/WFODicks, on Twitter at WFODicks, or you can follow us around on one of our mini channels at Shoza, at PJKSTL, at DrunkardSTL, or you can do shit that other people put up for me on Twitter at Napierisms. Listen to other shows on Radio FUBAR because we're not dicks about it. And then buy a shirt See you in hell.